What's going on, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. My name is Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have everybody tuning in. We're live right now, so let everybody know that we're live. We're going to take a real quick commercial break, and we're going to get right into the discussion. A lot of stuff we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about organized haters. What exactly does that mean? Stay tuned, because you will learn soon right here on Tariq Radio. Don't move a muscle.
Yo, you still ain't getting women? Really? Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game. And I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
What's good? It's the Melanated God, your man Jared D. Fineness. And right now, I want you to check out my brand new street album, The Black Code 2. It features my brand new single, Match My Vibe.
Only I don't have a specific type. I'm just particular about the things I like. Just so if I'm shallow on an easy, you my eyes. Only I don't have a specific type.
Visit www.jareddfineness.com and cop the Black Code 2. It's Black Empowerment Warrior Class music. For real!
Check out the Hurricane Report. That's a news website dedicated to lovingly serving the Black American community. Go to the website at h-report.news. Subscribe to them and follow them on Instagram at h_reeeport and at Twitter at TheHReport2, and you share the articles. You can purchase merchandise, donate, do a lot of stuff. So again, go to h-report.news.
In Washington, D.C., aliens descend upon the city and discover melanin.
This man feels great. This man's essence is incredible. Are all the males on this planet like this?
No, it seems to be only the men with dark and brown skin that have this.
Join us for the new drug. You can find on YouTube at The Urban Gods, spelled with a Z. Channel on YouTube, premiering October 24th.
Check out a brand new book called The Anatomy of a Corporate Lynching. This is by a brother named Charles Ford. And in this book, he takes us behind the scenes of his public copyright lawsuit against his employer, Con Edison. This book, he doesn't change any names to protect what he calls the guilty. He talks about how he stood his ground legally against theft and racial discrimination. So check out his book right now, The Anatomy of a Corporate Lynching. It's available worldwide on Amazon, paperback, and on Kindle right now. And find him at AuthorCharlesFord on Instagram.com.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system. There is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail, or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines, the new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines, now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
You are now tuning into the legendary Tariq Nasheed.
I ain't gave him the blood on that bridge in Selma.
On Tariq Radio.
I said, whoever threw that paper, your mom's a hoe.
Yo, what's going on, family? Welcome back to Tariq Radio. Glad to have you guys tuning in. Oh, we're going to have a great conversation tonight. People are piling up in the room. We'll have about 5,000-6,000 people in here soon. I want everybody, if you're looking at us live on YouTube, why don't you hit that like button? Hit that thumbs up button real quick. Let's get that out the way. Hit that like button. And then everybody hit that subscribe button, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I hope everybody has their copy or their stream of Hidden Colors 5 at HiddenColorsFilm.com. You can stream it right now. Watch it on your iPhone, your iPad, your MacBook, your Apple TV, your smart TV. You can watch it live right now. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com. If you are one of these broke motherfuckers, you can still watch it on your iPod. If you are a nigga who still has an iPod. So you can watch it anywhere. That's the great thing about it. You can watch it through the stream or you can get the DVD. And that's HiddenColorsFilm.com. And also at Hidden Colors Film, you can get the brand new foundational Black American t-shirts that are looking real fly, ladies and gentlemen. So, excuse me, a lot of stuff we got to get into. Later in the broadcast, I'm going to talk about organized haters. I want to talk about organized haters. And what is organized hater? What's an organized hater? See, a lot of times when people do something slick within Black society, we just look at it as a person being a hater. Oh, he's just a hater. And sometimes a lot of things aren't just random hate. There's more organization to it. There's more of a rhyme or reason to the hate. It's not just some random hater. See, a lot of people tried to do that with the Nipsey Hussle situation when Eric Holder assassinated him. They kept trying to push this random hater narrative, which I still never bought and I still do not buy. I do not believe that was a random hater. There are too many coincidences there for that to be a random hater. Too much stuff happened during the aftermath of that case just shows that this couldn't just be a random hater. The fact that he was allowed to run the city free after that murder, the fact that they couldn't catch him within a couple of days, the fact that they wouldn't put an APB out on the license plate of the car when they had it, the fact that the driver never got charged, the fact that this guy was able to hide out and then turn himself in at a mental health facility, the fact that he got a high-powered lawyer to represent him, just everything about that case, it looked like an organized hater did it. Somebody was organizing that with him and orchestrating that with him. So a lot of stuff we have to look at when people do certain things. Is it a hater? Is there a bigger picture there? Is it a more organized thing? Is there a bigger hand assisting the people? And that kind of brings me to the situation that I had with Isaiah Washington, the actor. Now, Isaiah Washington was, and I put that emphasis in past tense, he was a friend of mine. No more. I'm not friends with Isaiah Washington anymore. And I made it public that I'm not. I made it public that I don't rock with him. He does bitch ass stuff. And a lot of people understood, but they were still a little confused. They were like, damn, we get it, but what happened? I don't want to go too deep into it, but Isaiah Washington has done a lot of little funny style stuff behind the scenes that has been extremely questionable. And that's the issue. A lot of little stuff, a lot of agent type stuff behind the scenes, because I'm going to be very honest. Some of the stuff that he's done has me questioning, is this guy working with the FBI or somebody? It's that level type of stuff. And I just don't say that about anybody. I really feel some high suspicions about Isaiah Washington and some of the things that he's done behind the scenes. This whole MAGA Trump thing that he's on, I'm not even tripping on that. I know that's just he's trying to get a bag or whatever. I'm not even tripping on that. But just some of the behind the scenes stuff. How Isaiah would do shit like go behind the scenes and try to instigate beefs and then try to pull me into people's beefs And the fact that he's trying to start these little beefs with people behind the scene. This was a culmination of a lot of little things. And I just said enough is enough. One thing, and I'm not going to get too deep, but just a few things I'll touch on. A while back, he was calling me, and I think I probably mentioned this before. He had got into it with Antonio Moore about ADOS. He was like, yeah, I'm beefing with the leaders of ADOS, man. I need you to help me. I'm like, don't call me with no shit like that. This was a while ago. He got into some shit with Antonio Moore. And I'm like, don't bring me in. That's some shit between you and them. Don't bring me in that. I'm like, why? And just stuff like that is just making me raise an eyebrow. I think I did mention that. But stuff like that really made me raise an eyebrow. And just, he would contact a lot of people that I knew. He would contact certain people who were in my films and then try to instigate little stuff, contacting my security, the people who provide security for me. He's kind of ingratiating himself with them. I'm like, this dude is really getting kind of close and shadowing a lot of stuff that I got going on. And one thing that I really, really took issue with this whole Trump thing that they're doing, this whole MAGA thing. So he's gotten together with some people and they're on some black conservative Trump supporter thing. So he's trying to explain to me, trying to get me to meet all these folks that's black conservatives. They don't like the Democrats. I'm like, cool, then knock yourself out. I don't really need to meet all these people. Knock yourself out. I don't like what the Democrats are doing either, but I'm not going to jump over there with the Republicans who ain't doing nothing. But if you want to do that and there's a bag for you, knock yourself out. But one thing they did that really rubbed me the wrong way, they had some kind of campaign video, some of his people that he's working with. They had this campaign video, this pro-Trump video, black people supporting Trump and Blexit and all this shit. All right, knock yourself out. And then they did something I really didn't like. They had images of Nipsey Hussle in this pro-Trump ad. And I hit him up. I said, yo, what the fuck is that? What do you mean? What you mean? I said, bruh, that's disrespectful as hell, putting Nipsey Hussle in a Trump ad or putting images of Nipsey Hussle in a Trump ad. What are you doing? Oh man, I don't know. Somebody shot it. He started nigga splaining. But I'm like, dude, Nipsey was my dude. That's not cool at all. That's not cool at all. I'm not co-signing no shit like that because hell, Nipsey, if he was here, he would tell you to kiss his ass and not put his image in no bullshit like this. So we had some words about that behind closed doors, behind the scenes. I really had a problem with that. Nipsey had a song called Fuck Donald Trump. And this man just died shit, a few months ago, really. So y'all doing shit like that, that really, really rubbed me the wrong way about him and that whole little clique. That really, really rubbed me the wrong way. I said, man, that... And we went back and forth about it. He kind of felt salty because I let him know we're going to have problems if y'all are doing little shit like this. Yeah, we're going to have problems if we do little shit like this. That's too disrespectful. And that was my G. And I can't co-sign no shit like that. So time goes on. So Isaiah goes to my movie premiere out here in LA, and I saw him there, and I put him on the list to get in. He called me, he wanted to get on the list. I put him and some people on the list. They got in, and it was packed, and I'm busy doing my thing and did the premiere, and then I left and I started traveling. Then he hit me up when I was traveling. He called me talking about, how come I didn't thank everybody? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, you should have thanked everybody. You should have thanked such and such. You should have thanked this person. You should have thanked everybody. What the fuck are you talking about? So I cussed his ass out on that. I'm like, what is this nigga talking about? I said, man, don't ever call me with no stupid shit like this again, dude. I mean, he's little shit like that. And then recently, I'm hearing people, just a few people hit me up like, hey, man, why is Isaiah calling me talking shit about you? Some people that I know that he's corresponding with. So he's going behind the scenes, calling people, talking about, yeah, Tariq ain't shit because he didn't thank me for coming to his premiere. It sounds like a lot of jealousy, too. Sound like jealousy, but it's more than that. I can look at it as just jealousy, but it sounds like more than that. Sounds like more than that. The fact that he's behind the scenes just contacting people I know, trying to instigate beefs. Who are you working for, nigga? This hate seems very organized. You're just calling a lot of people that I know, you laughing and cock-con and kikiing with me, but then you get behind the scenes doing all of this little instigating ass shit. So I really let him know, nigga, don't ever hit me up again. And if I see you, it's on. And we can get it popping. I'm like, I went there with it. We can get it popping any fucking time. Then he started threatening to call SWAT. I got SWAT on my side. And he started talking like that. This nigga started talking like the police. So yeah, fuck Isaiah as a record company, a crew, and a production team. You dig? So that's where I am with that. That dude is real funny style. I mean, he gets into it with folks, these little petty little beefs behind the scenes. It's real funny style. He got into it with Matt Barnes. He said some little slick shit to Matt Barnes, the basketball player. Then I think he made a comment about Matt Barnes' kids or something in Matt's DMs. And Matt was like, hey, man, we need to go ahead and throw hands if that's the case. And then Isaiah started talking about getting lawyers on him. So he does little weird shit like that. Isaiah does little weird shit like that. So you got to clean house. Certain people, you got to charge them to the game. We're talking about Isaiah Washington for people who are just getting in. So a lot of people, even when I had him on my show on Ism and a few other interviews he's done, a lot of folks was like, damn, man, this man sounds kind of weird. Yeah. So my dude, I don't know what the hell is going on with him. I don't know if it's the narcotic. I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know if this nigga's working with them folks. Either way, I don't fuck with him. Either way, I don't rock with Isaiah Washington. That's just what it is right there. You dig? So I just wanted to get the air clear right there. Now there's a lot of other stuff that I could have went into, but that's the meat and the bones of it right there. Yeah, that's just the meat and the bones of it right there, yo. You dig? I don't do that fake Hollywood shit. I don't do that. I don't know. This nigga think he did me a favor by going to my premiere. I don't know how this nigga thinks I did him some kind of favor. Or he did me a favor. He thinks he did me a favor by coming to. I don't know. But it just sounds like organized hate. Ain't no motherfucker that stupid. There might be some agent provocateur type of thing going. Excuse me. Shout out to RZA, by the way. Speaking of Hidden Colors 5. RZA got into a little pickle. They put some kind of charges on RZA. Brother RZA Islam is locked up right now, and hopefully he's good. I want to check and see if my brother's okay, if he needs some on his books. I want to see what's going on. I know what they got him on was a contempt of court. They said something in court that the judge didn't like, and so, you know, they're kind of dicking with him a little bit, but I hope my brother's going to be all right, man. RZA, keep your head up. Hopefully my brother's going to be good. Now, I know he'll be straight. He'll be straight. So, but anyway, that's the meat and the bones of all that other stuff with Isaiah. So y'all guys get a picture why I just don't rock with this dude. I'm cool. That's not the nigga to rock with. But I digress. Now, what's happening in the news? You know, there's a story that's hilarious right now. It's sad but funny. Y'all remember that movie about the orphan girl? There's a real life story like that. There is a real life story how there's a girl that was adopted from the Ukraine, I think. She was adopted from the Ukraine. And they were living in the family, they brought her to Indiana. Now she's supposed to be like 6 years old or something. But they think it's a grown ass woman. They think the child was a grown ass woman. Then they fucked around and abandoned her. And I'm like, oh my God. But this girl, let me play the news story real quick. I mean, it's a funny but sad, because what if she is a girl? But I don't know. Hold on.
News 18 has been working for answers since charges were filed earlier this month in a case that's been in the works for most of this decade. Michael and Christine Barnett are both charged with child neglect. The two are accused of adopting a Ukrainian girl with dwarfism, changing her age legally from 8 to 22 years old, putting her in a Lafayette apartment, and then leaving with the rest of the family for Canada. One of Christine's friends says that's not all true.
So they got the girl. They got spooked and they said, this bitch ain't no child. She's 22 years old. And then went and got an apartment and they bounced and left the country. And they got suspicious. They were like, hold on. They tried to bathe her. And they were like, hey, she got a gang of fucking pubic hair. Goddamn. For a 6 year old, she got pubic hair on the potty. So that scared them. And then the wife, her tampons kept going missing. Like, where the fuck are my tampons? So the child is on her cycle on the low, stealing tampons. So it's all over the place.
A friend spoke to News 18 on the basis of anonymity Monday. The information is unverified by News 18. The friend says the girl had severe mental health issues when the Barnetts adopted her in 2010. According to the friend, the girl physically attacked the family and caused a, quote, traumatic adoption experience.
This girl was beating the shit out the family. She tried to kill the other kids. She even slapped the mama, tried to fuck the dad. I mean, this girl was losing her damn mind.
The family believed the girl was older than they were told. The friend says the court accepted two doctor's reports saying the girl was actually an adult. The documents are unverified. After the girl's age was legally changed, the friend said the Barnetts helped the girl get housing in Lafayette. The friend says the girl was supposedly living on her own under the care of doctors. However, affidavits filed.
Okay, so basically, they put her in an apartment and just bounced. They packed their asses up and then moved to damn Canada. Now, what if she was a girl? What if, you know, what if she was a little girl? I don't know. Shit, what would y'all do? What would y'all do? Y'all adopt somebody and it's a little person. They have dwarfism and they saying they 6 and 7 years old. But they got a tattoo on their navel. I'm like, God damn. Oh my God. It's a sad but funny story. Because let me tell you something. And she came from the UK. Not the UK, but the Ukraine. She came from the Ukraine. And it's very poor over there. It's a lot of poverty over there. So let me ask y'all this. If you were a person with dwarfism and you were living in poverty, would you pull off a finesse and say you were a child too? I would. Shit. If my ass is over somewhere in a third world country, I'm little as hell, I can't get a job, I look like a 6 year old and I can't get no job, well damn it, I'm going on the internet and put up some baby pictures of myself. I'm looking for a mommy. I'm looking for a mommy and daddy. And they adopt my ass and bring me over here. I'm gonna be taking pictures with a onesie on and everything. I'm a finesse. And I get there, they're like, well, you damn baby, you look kind of old in the face. I'm like, well, shit, I'm stressed. This is a long fucking flight. Now get me, where's the food and the liquor? Because I'm trying to get fucked up. Well, we're going to give you a bath. I like that. Will mommy bathe me? They give me a bath. I'm like, God damn, boy, you got a lot of dick and hair. I said, well, bitch, I'm mixed with werewolf. So stop fucking with me and get to bathing. Lift them nuts and get busy. Don't question me. I'm a baby. Now, where's the money, bitch? I heard y'all got some cheddar around here. I'd finesse, too. I'm not even mad at the little girl. I'm not even mad at her. I'm not mad at her. I would do the same finesse. So, you know, it's sad that they left her, though. So hopefully the little lady will be all right. Hopefully she will be fine. My God. Anyway, now what else is happening out here, man? What else is going on out here in the streets? This whole case with Joshua Brown. And I know a lot of people have been talking about this for the last couple of days. The Joshua Brown case, that was the brother who testified in the Amber Geiger case. And he was found dead 2 days after the trial. Authorities down in Dallas tried to say, because all the suspicion was on them, everybody was looking at them funny style, because they've been lying for the longest. Their police department is known for liars. That whole department is rotten to hell, with all the way from Renee Hall, that mammy Renee Hall, to all the other race soldiers on that force. So they tried to get the heat off them. They tried to say that Josh Brown got killed because of a failed drug deal. We knew that was coming. We knew the failed drug deal story was coming. And let me tell y'all something. The details of this drug deal gone bad, every angle of it is implausible, and it has holes in it. Almost every single angle of that bullshit story that they said about Josh, every angle has a damn hole in it. What they're saying is some dudes from Alexandria, Louisiana. Is that the city? It's a place in central Louisiana. I want to say it's Alexandria. But where these niggas are from, they drove, 4-5 hours from the middle of Louisiana, and they drove to Dallas to get some weed, and Joshua basically had 12 pounds of weed. That's what they said they found on him. They found $4,000 and 12 pounds of weed. So these niggas drove all the way from Louisiana, from the middle of Louisiana, to Dallas, all that long way. Forget about Baton Rouge, just right there. Shreveport is right there. New Orleans is only a couple of hours away if you want to get a plug. If you needed a plug on something, you could go right down to New Orleans. You could go to Bourbon Street and stand out there for 5 minutes and get a damn plug on some weed in New Orleans. You stand out there on Bourbon Street for 5 goddamn minutes, somebody's going to hook you up by accident. You get hooked up by accident down in New Orleans. But no. They didn't do something that's just more practical. They said, we're going to go all the way to Dallas. And this dude who was just on television in a high profile case, yeah, we're going to go do a deal with him. Out of all the drug dealers you can do a deal with, you're going to do a deal with a nigga who's on TV testifying against cops. Any drug dealer or anybody in the game will see something like that and immediately know that this nigga's hot, eyes are on him. That's the last person you're going to do a damn deal with. But no. They want us to just forget about logic. Just throw logic and reason all out the window. Just throw logic and reason out the... I mean, none of this makes any lick of damn sense, no matter how you look at it. On the drug dealer's side and Joshua's side, nothing makes sense. I'm just thinking, like, if I'm a drug dealer in Louisiana and I want to get a plug, even if I want to rob somebody, because some people tried to use that scenario where maybe they went up there just to rob them. Okay. You drove 5 hours to rob somebody and didn't get what you went to rob them for? You drive to a whole nother state to rob a motherfucker you don't know like that. You don't know who he's with. You don't know what he's carrying. And then you go try to rob him and don't get what you tried to rob. Robberies don't go like that. when you go robbing somebody for their dope, what you do, you show up, you show the money, they show the dope, you pull a gun. Okay, give me your shit. Or you buy it, you see the dope, you give them the money for it, and then you take your money back. That's how a robbery goes. I mean, come on, make it make sense. Let's make it make sense. You don't rob somebody for some damn dope and don't get the damn dope and don't see the dope. I mean, none of this shit makes sense. None of the scenarios make any sense. The drug, so-called, was in the house, and that's not how robberies work. And look at Joshua's position. Okay, Joshua said, hey, I was just in a high-profile case, a high-profile trial. They didn't have anything on me. I was so smart, I outsmarted the police. They didn't have anything. They see I don't really have a record like that. They didn't question me. They didn't cross-examine me like that or discredit me for being a big drug dealer. But 2 days after the trial, I'm going to make the stupidest-ass drug deal ever and invite some niggas from Louisiana to my house to make a damn drug deal. Who in the hell does that? Who in the hell does that with local niggas, let alone some niggas from out of town? You gonna invite them to your crib? The alleged drug deal went on outside of his apartment in his parking lot. You gonna let some niggas you don't know in your gated community and do this crazy bullshit ass so-called drug deal? That don't make sense. They don't even have the lie right. They don't even have the lie right. And also, medical marijuana out there, medicinal marijuana, is legal in New Orleans. So that means the street value of marijuana out there is down. Whenever you legalize something, legalize marijuana, whatever, the street value goes down. You don't need a plug like that. Hell, you can just go to a dispensary and get it. So the value of it is going to go down. So why would these niggas risk all that? You doing a New Jack City type of shootout, because Joshua Brown is really Nino Brown. You're doing this big old shootout over 12 damn pounds of weed. That when you get to New Orleans or when you get back to Louisiana, the street value of it is going to go down. None of it makes no sense. But these folks think, okay, they'll say anything to us and we're supposed to buy it. Because they have no credibility. I mean, they're saying anything right now. They're just hoping that we're stupid. I know weed is not legal in Dallas. Medicinal weed is legal in Louisiana. So, again, and the Dallas police are like, hey, don't look at us. I mean, there's a lot of rumors that we might be involved. Now, why would folks think that, Dallas police? Why would people think that you guys are being deceptive? Is it because of Amber Geiger? The case where this white supremacist-ass woman sat up here and killed somebody and lied, and who, she's racist as hell and all her partners are racist, and that Dallas Police Department has several investigations because of the racist people who work there making threats on against black people online and Facebook. See, people are waking up and calling this stuff out, which is good. You understand? Because they're still trying to shovel shit at us. And right now, they got Tammy the Mammy. She's on a PR tour to clean up her rep for looking like the mammy she is. She was on Tamarin Hall's show. And I want y'all to listen to Tammy the Mammy. She's explaining why she was doing all that mammying in court. Let's listen to Tammy the Mammy.
And they have filed a formal complaint saying it was unethical for you to hand her that Bible. What is your response to them?
Well, it's not as though I said, Ms. Geiger, you need a Bible.
But when you give someone a Bible, it is seen, it is a religious...
It was at her request.
It was at her request.
What she said to me after I said, please forgive yourself so that you can live a purposeful life.
Oh, Lord. And she's up here dressed like a Sunday school teacher. She done permed. She got the little mammy perm. Okay.
And she said, do you think my life can still have purpose? And I said, absolutely, it can. And she asked me, she said, do you think God will forgive me? And I said, absolutely, he will. And then she said, but I don't even have a Bible. I don't own a Bible. I don't know where to begin. And in that moment, I didn't want to lose Amber Geiger. I said, hold on.
What the hell are you talking about? You didn't want to lose Amber Geiger. What kind of mammy talk? I mean, she's doubling down on the mammyism, by the way. This woman just killed a dude, a brother in his apartment, and just said black folks ain't shit and Martin Luther King, fuck him. This woman just sent a bunch of racist texts, kill somebody, and you don't want to lose her? What kind of mammy ass shit is this? She's doubling down on the mammyism.
The courtroom and went to my chambers and retrieved my Bible.
But does it get confusing when a judge behaves that way and that you are there for the law, not for religion?
I was not there for the law.
Whoa. I wasn't there for the law? This is a judge sitting here saying this. I wasn't here for the law? What the hell? This is a judge sitting up here saying this stuff. This woman just said, the hell with my career. Mammying is more important.
Duties had been concluded. No defendant presents themselves as one single act. The sum total of their life is presented. And
interesting you say that, because now the sum total of your years as a judge, people are now looking at that one moment. Mm-hmm. And judging you. Mm-hmm. And I know you've seen the comments. I know you've seen the vitriol.
Actually, I have not.
You have, Tammy the Mammy.
I won't read them to you.
It's funny you say that.
But some of them have been brutal.
They are brutal. My family's concerned, but I'm not.
What is your family's concern?
They've read the comments. I have not.
For your safety?
Yes.
Ain't nobody going to do nothing to your mammy ass.
My faith is strong.
Oh, Lord.
If God brings me to it, he'll bring me through it. One of the reasons why I'm discussing the hug, so that people will understand the sum total of what happened. Ms. Geiger asked about forgiveness. Ms. Geiger asked if I would hug her. I don't think any human being would have refused her at that moment.
Please.
You're such a strong woman.
Oh, God. Now, listen to her explain about that bailiff that was in the courtroom, that other mammy. It was just mammy fest going on in that court. Yeah, and this woman is clearly not fit to serve no more. She's a goddamn mammy. This mammyism is a cancer within black society. But listen to her explain why the bailiff was in there rubbing on Amber Geiger's hair. Remember that other mammy with those toe-up edges was in there rubbing on Amber Geiger's hair in front of the cameras because white daddy instructed her to? Now listen to this. Listen to this.
Happened in that moment.
Hold on.
This, you have the answers to far more.
I do.
Hold on.
I want to ask you about the bailiff and explain to us what happened there. So much of this, you have the answers to far more.
I do.
What happened in that moment?
So Ms. Geiger had been found guilty of murder, and I had held her bond insufficient, which means she was not free to move about. She was in the custody of the sheriff's department. However, we were on a lunch break, and I couldn't send her to the jail to be frisked. So we asked a female bailiff to stay with her throughout the lunch break. And if you know anything about the jail, you got to search every part of a person, including their hair, because we have people smuggle contraband and weapons in all manner of ways.
She was searching her
hair. Yes, she was accused of stroking her hair, but actually what she's looking for is contraband or weapons. And they do that to every female.
Even Tamron is looking like, bitch, really? These people think we stupid as hell. So she was looking for contraband?
basically what she's looking for is contraband or weapons. And they do that to every female. So if you come to the Dallas County Jail, they're going to remove
look, your... Look, the audience, they're laughing like, this is so stupid. The audience is laughing like, yeah, do y'all think we're stupid?
This is why we do this.
Man, do y'all know how much of a crock of bullshit that is? Number one, if you were looking for contraband, which she wasn't, you're going to use gloves. You're going to use gloves. Everything about what she said is a lie. They weren't looking for no damn contraband in her hair. When you look for contraband, first of all, you got to go through metal detectors and all this stuff to even get in the courtroom. Let's be very clear. When people are just lying to our faces like that, this shows the contempt and disrespect they have for the public. Number one, you're going to go through metal detectors and be searched and all that with the machines when you go in the courtroom, especially with a high profile case like that. Number two, if you're going to have your hair checked, they're going to do that during the processing. When you go to booking, when they book you, that's when they do that. What purpose would it make to check somebody for contraband in a court when you still have to be transported? You do that after you're transported. That don't make no damn sense. And also, she was rubbing Amber Geiger's hair. She wasn't searching her hair for anything. When you get your hair searched, they be all up in your scalp. Nigga, getting your hair searched for contraband, it ain't all gentle and they fluffing and perming your shit. When you get your hair checked, they all up in your scalp, in your ears. They're not that damn gentle. And if she was being frisked for contraband, how come you didn't check her purse? How come you didn't check what she had in her coat? How come you didn't check her whole damn body? She was stroking her hair on camera to show leniency to her. Don't come out here telling us a crock of bullshit like that. These people are just lying to our damn faces at this point. She wasn't looking for anything. That's not how you frisk somebody's or check somebody's hair. You don't rub their edges and you don't rub and fluff their ends with no gloves on. This is Tammy the Mammy has to go. She knows she's done right now. So White Daddy and those guys, they done pushed her out to toe the line for them. They pushed her out there to toe the line. But anyway, I digress. See, that's the thing. We got to watch these folks. And when the authoritative people are telling us blatant lies like this, they are delegitimizing themselves. Tammy the Mammy is doing the bidding of White Daddy. See, the thing is, they'll put a Negro out there to do the bidding for them. They like to put Negroes out there to make themselves look stupid for them. And too many Negroes are willing to do it. And that brings me to this, that television show that Bob Hart Abishola, what's her name? Abiola, Abishola, whatever the hell her damn name is. There's another clip from that show. That show on CBS. And I know this show is about to get canceled because it's painfully unfunny. The show about the Nigerian immigrant who comes over and gets with a white zaddy. She gets with a zaddy and zaddy, that was supposed to be the hook of the show. The show is really them taking shots at foundational Black Americans. This show is used really as a vehicle to just shit on Black Americans in different ways. And I played a clip a couple of weeks ago on the, I think the first episode, they were shitting on Black Americans. Listen to this. This was on the newest episode of this bullshit.
But if I were to marry again, it would only be to a Nigerian man.
Okay, the care. If I were to marry again, it would only be to a Nigerian man. Listen.
That kind of narrows down your options, doesn't it?
Don't listen to her. She has many options. Top of the list, Nigerian man, same tribe.
Yoruba.
Mm-hmm. Then Nigerian man, different tribe.
Igbo.
Mm-hmm. Then other Africans. Then Caribbean. Then white. Then African American. Mm-hmm. Then African American.
Mm-hmm. Wait. So a Black man is last on your list? Below white men?
You get it.
Okay. So they're talking about, excuse me, my throat is janky right now. And this show is very interesting. I mean, they're going all out at this point. And it's an African immigrant writer who's actually from the UK. She's one of the people who helps the white supremacists write this bullshit. And basically, they're coming on out with what they've been saying for a long time. A lot of these foreign coons, they've been saying this type of stuff for a long time. So now it's like it's time for them to just bring it on out in the forefront. They're just going to go all out with it right now. So she was like, she's going to marry a Nigerian first from her tribe, then somebody, another tribe second, a Caribbean second, white man, then the black man is last, a black American is last. So they're taking little disrespectful shots like this on television, and nobody's really watching this show. Let me explain to some of you foreign coons, and not all of you are coons. I'm talking about the coons within your communities, and we're checking them because y'all don't check them. Nobody's checking their coons. See, we check our domestic coons. We check our domestic coons. We have domestic coons and we check them. We check the Diamond and Silks and the Jessies and all these people. We check them. But the thing is, these foreign coons, nobody checks them. And you guys know they were coons. You knew they were coons back in your homeland. And y'all not checking your coons. And we've been telling you, y'all better get your coons in check. Because when we start getting at them, everybody's going to cry foul. And that's what's happening now. We're getting at these coons heavy. And now people want to cry foul. But them getting together with these white supremacists, they think that they're going to get in the good graces of these white supremacists. And y'all don't understand. I want my people from the diaspora to understand these white supremacists give less than a shit about you. They put you into positions to kind of undermine us. That doesn't mean they care about you. See, y'all take that as, oh, they must like us more. No, they don't. They're using you as a tool. They dislike you more than they dislike us. There's a scene in Hotel Rwanda that I want y'all to remember. I talked about this before. When everybody was over there slaughtering each other in Rwanda, and the Nick Nolte character was talking to the main character, and the main character brother was like, hey man, the West, is the West going to help us? We need the West to come help us. And Nick Nolte's character said, ain't nobody coming to help you. He's like, why? He said, y'all not even niggas. You're African. And a lot of folks don't know what that means. See, to the white supremacists, see, y'all just one big nigga too. Y'all just one big foreign nigga. See, we one big nigga here, but they understand what we're capable of. They understand, you know, what we our get down is different. We'll put them things up if need be. So they understand we push to the limit. They know what we're capable of. But over there, they know that you're just one big nigga. You're just one big foreign nigga over there. You understand? They look at you as one big foreign punchline over there. And understand, and I want my brothers and sisters in the diaspora to understand, because when y'all get into these little conversations talking about how, well, we're better than Akata and all that old bullshit, and then you get over here with white mommy, white daddy, understand, white mommy and white daddy didn't really want you here until we fought to get you here. It was foundational black Americans in the 1960s, and I've said this many times, we were the ones saying, hey, y'all better let our brothers and sisters over here, because there was a zero quota, especially for African immigration. They didn't let nobody really in large numbers come over. And we said, no, we need to do something about that. We got our civil rights bill passed here, so let's help our brothers and sisters in the diaspora. So we fought and made that happen. Always be clear of that. I want y'all to really be clear of that. Because when you thrive, it is because of foundational black Americans paving the way for you. This is why when you go to other places, especially European countries like France, when y'all go to France, you don't really thrive like that. when you jump on them boats and go up to Italy. You don't be thriving in Italy. A lot of white people in Italy. Y'all don't be thriving like that in Italy. I was just in Greece. I saw some African brothers and sisters up in Greece out there hustling on the streets. You weren't really thriving. So you get around the white people up there. When it's just the white people, you ain't really got it popping like that. You go to Italy, Spain, all these little places, Greece. You don't really get it popping. When do you get it popping? You get it popping when you bring your asses over here around us. You see, you get it popping. You see that? You see the common denominator? You get it popping when you come over here with us, because we've already paved the way and created set-asides for you. So when you come here, you just off and running. You good to go. That's us. That is us doing that. Never forget that. When you talk that Akata bullshit, understand that part of the game. See, we need to get this stuff straight. Now, listen to the rest of this stuff on this bullshit show. This type of disrespect.
On your list, below white men, you get it. I get that you full of crap. Hmm? All you Africans think you better than us. Well, what? You don't make it easy for yourselves. What's that supposed to mean? Oh, come on. Gang bangers, welfare stamps, the baby mamas.
Now, did y'all catch that? That, well, you African Americans don't make it easy on yourself. Gang bangers, welfare stamps, and baby mamas. Did she go there? Gang bangers, welfare stamps, and baby mamas. Let's start with the gangbangers. Our gangbangers ain't got nothing on yours. Let's be real. Our gangbangers, and a lot of gangbanging and a lot of the gangbangers, when you look at it over here, that really started after the 1965 Immigration Act, by the way. I've always pointed that out. A lot of the gangs start popping off when certain immigrant groups started to flood. When you look at the Tekashi case, all the gangbangers, most of those gangbangers, those black ones, many of them aren't even foundational black Americans. But when we look at gangbangers and people doing things in violent gangs, I mean, damn, if we gonna go there, y'all got whole Boko Harams over there. Y'all got gangs, armed gangs over there kidnapping whole villages. Are we going there? Really? Yeah, the Bloods and Crips aren't just kidnapping whole goddamn communities of people. See, we got to watch these people when they start projecting their bullshit onto us. Crips, Bloods, and Vice Lords, they don't kidnap whole schools of girls and hold them hostage for 3-4 months. You dig? Gangbangers? Man, please. Y'all got child soldiers over there, be chopping folks up, chopping over babies. Those gangs over there are a beast. Gangbangers? Y'all got all types of shit over there that we don't have. Y'all have all types of child sex trafficking rings. All types of stuff. Gangbangers? Really? Welfare stamps? Really? Are we going to go there with the welfare? People getting handouts? I mean, damn. You know, you go over parts of all over the country, all over the continent, and there's people getting handouts. There's nonprofits all over the... These white nonprofit organizations coming over there giving handouts, which we understand why, but you can't sit up there and the minute a white person show up, everybody surrounds them and starts dancing and then come talk to us about some damn welfare. Really? Wow. And yeah, welfare was created for white Americans. But the thing that really got me was the baby mamas. The baby mamas. Welfare, the baby mamas. Again, when did the baby mama stuff, all the single mothers pop up in black American society? The single mother thing popped up in the late 60s. Before the late 60s, it was very taboo to be a black single mother. That was extremely taboo. Right after immigration again, all of a sudden single mothers started popping up everywhere. Why was that? Those were women dropping off anchor babies all over the place. Dropping off anchor babies here, and they drop off anchor babies in different parts of Europe now. I saw something not too long ago where a lot of women were going from Senegal, I think, going up to France, and these women, they'll get some kind of refugee boat and go to some of these European cities, and literally the minute they get there, they find a white man to fuck so they can have an anchor baby. They jump off the boat fucking. And I'm not even being facetious saying this. They sat up there and admitted that when we get there, we must have a baby to stay. So the finesse game is already there. The minute they get to France or to Holland or some of these places, many of them, and I ain't talking about all, but many of them find the first white person they can find so they can have a damn anchor baby. So they can start getting benefits and welfare checks and welfare stamps. So this is a reality. You understand? See, people kind of have a tendency to project their own debauchery onto other folks. And what's interesting, a lot of folks were calling out the writer of this garbage. A lot of people were calling out the writer of this show. Now, she's a comedian out there, I think in the UK. And let me read a tweet she put up. Her name is Gina Hashier. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. No. I said Hashier. Yashier. Gina Yashier. And she's an African immigrant who lives in the UK. She's a lesbian. She has a white girlfriend. She's a lesbian with a white girlfriend, and that's another thing. See, they come over here and talk about how homophobic we are and how this and that, and you can't do that shit over there where you're from. But people were calling out this Gina lady for writing this filth. And then she said on Twitter, she says, Africans have been parodied by ADOS actors for years. Now we get to tell our story and you're bent out of shape. Countless kids of African immigrants, including myself, were bullied at school by ADOS and Caribbean descendants of slaves. Funny, no acknowledgement from you guys. So basically, what this woman is saying is that this show is revenge for make-believe taunting she got for being African or the child of an African immigrant, which is bullshit. That's another excuse they like using to justify the jealousy and vitriol they already have when they come over here or to the UK. Yeah, she was going in on American descendants of slaves. See, they're trying to be bold with it. This woman, like others, they tell the lie that they were called all types of African booty scratchers in school, which they weren't. That's the go-to lie. People, that's an old taunt from the 70s and 80s. Nobody uses that bullshit. That's the excuse they use to justify. They when they come over, they're already planning on shitting on us. They're just looking for justification and making up that bullshit African booty scratcher lie that they all tell. That's their justification to take so-called lifelong revenge against foundational black Americans, which you wanted to do anyway. Number one, no kid was calling you all types of jungle bitches and all this stuff because black kids don't talk like that. Number two, nobody would know that you're African because you look like the average black kid. Nobody would know you're African unless you were already acting funny style. Unless you were already being funny style, which a lot, and I talked about that before, your parents tell you not to associate with us. So you be trying to hang with the white kids, and the white kids are quick to let you know you're just another nigger. But no, I am not a nigger. I am from Uganda. Yeah, that's still nigger. Yeah, the white kids let you know. See, you think, in your mind, y'all think that, especially living over there in certain parts of West Africa, a lot of people be thinking that they're dark Brits. A lot of people think that they're dark Brits or dark French people. And then when you get around these folks, because you think you got more of a camaraderie with them, hell, your ancestors helped them capture some of us. So y'all still think you got that kind of relationship with them. You think, okay, I'm the king of a village. Well, the village ain't got no water and everybody's shitting in the streets, but I'm the king of the village. So I'm royalty. I'm part of royalty. You understand? It's a lot of delusion that goes on. You're the king of rubbish. It's rubbish in the streets. And you think you're the king and you think you're part of the royal family. Because of that king and queen shit. That's why I don't get too much on that. So you think, okay, I'm part of a royal family and this white person is part of a royal family. You know, we're just going through some financial hardships with the royal family, but you know, when I get back with White Zaddy, we'll get everything on the road to get at these niggas over here, these Akatas. Let me get with White Mommy and White Daddy and we'll get these Akatas in line. And they're like, no, nigga, you're just like them to me. You're no different. Now, I'll use you to undermine them just to get under their skin a little bit. But at the end of the day, yeah, you're still a nigga. And I have a little gutter sex with you because some of those other American black girls don't want to fuck with me. But, you know, because I'm a fat, greasy white man. And I like little chocolate bunnies. But most of the sisters over here are repulsed by me. But your bedwinching ass worships me. So I can use you. You understand? This is how the white supremacists... No. This is what y'all need to hear. Just like this show, the Bob Loves Abiola, whatever her name is. He's a big old fat, funny-looking white man. You dig? That's the white supremacists taking a jab. Notice it's a fat white man that white women don't want. And that's who he's... He's the love interest of the Nigerian lady. See, that's part of the joke. That's why they're not offended by this. They're like, oh, yeah, you can have him. Shit. Yeah, you can have him. You don't even know you're part of, you're the butt of the joke, too. That's the part of the game that a lot of you don't realize. You're the butt of the joke, too. You dig? See, we know how they act. We know how they think. We know the game with them. You know, that's why they tread lightly with us in certain respects. But this is why, again, domestic coons and foreign coons are different. Because with our domestic coons like the Larry Elders and people like that, they understand that there's only so far they could go with the cooning. They can't be covert. They have to be more buffoonish with it. It almost has to be cartoonish cooning. It's very public. Their cooning is very, very public. You got to go and just be real clownish and buffoonish in front of cameras. That's the effectiveness of a Jesse Lee Peterson and a Diamond and Silk. You know, it's like a vaudeville show. And, you know, they get a couple of table scraps from White Mommy and White Daddy. So they become basically entertainment for white people. The Diamond and Silks and the Jessies, they can't really go in a covert mode within black society because they're too buffoonish. And we already know who they are and we've already called them out and they can't come around us. They can't come around black society like that. You understand? But what they don't do, they don't go to the point of working with these folks to put their hand in certain laws, because they understand that those laws will affect them too. Do you know what I'm saying? A lot of domestic coons, they tread lightly on working with the white supremacists to get specific laws to harm us. Because they're fully aware that being a black American, those laws will hurt them too. Because they have to go back into, they can't amalgamate themselves into white society, and there's no other society that's going to help them. So they tread lightly as far as that. But the foreign coons are different. It's not just about getting a bag with them. The foreign coons, they undermine us because a lot of their culture, they sit up hating on us, and there's a lot of jealousy brewing in a lot of their cultures anyway. So they'll shit on us for free. Getting a bag is just a life perk. They've been wanting to shit on us anyway. They'll shit on us for absolutely free. They'll come and undermine us just for the hate of it. So this is why a lot of these foreign coons, they'll get in those writers' rooms and they'll covertly help them put together shows like this. They'll work with some of these organizations like Me Too and some of these other street harassment organizations and help them put together laws that will actually target and harm black people. They'll do what Botham Jean's family did, get out there and hug and kiss on these white people and forgive them for being racist, and then create a precedent for all black people to be targeted while they go shift somewhere in their own community. See, that's the thing. They're insulated in their own little immigrant communities now that offer them protection, because white society, they'll turn their back at any moment. And the domestic coons understand that. So that's why they tread lightly, because they don't have anywhere else to go. So they got to be very careful about having the white supremacists cut off their daily bread and just being stuck out there by themselves with these laws hitting them. But some of these foreign coons, they can decimate black American society. They can put a target on black American society's backs, and they'll go slither away in their little communities where they're protected with their own group of folks who already have their little economy going. You understand? Yeah, look at Stacey Dash, for example. Now, she's stuck. She ain't got no paper. She's stuck. You dig? See, she tried to play the Candace Owens role. But see, Stacey don't have those connections with the Caribbean countries and all that. See, Candace Owens still has her little Caribbean connections, her little Caribbean family. So you got to understand the dynamic between the foreign coons and the domestic coons. And speaking of domestic and foreign coons, Tamara Burke. Tarana Burke. She was on Jemele Hill's podcast. Jemele Hill has a podcast, and Tarana Burke was on there. Let me play some clips from that. And finally, Tarana Burke, y'all know from Me Too and all that old bullshit where they target black men. Tarana Burke, who said the famous words, "Why is it my job to go after white men?" She was on a podcast, so she basically admitted finally that she's Caribbean. Her family's Caribbean. Which we've been telling people, nobody works with white supremacists that much, and they're a part of our culture. They're foreigners. This is why it's so easy for them to work with these white supremacists to help put a target on our backs. Tarana Burke is very dangerous, and she mentioned me in this interview, by the way.
My dad was 6'3", Caribbean, big gruffy voice, and he was the man in the neighborhood, right? The number runner. So, you know, he ran things. And so I remember him.
Okay, so that's her on Jemele Hill's show, saying that her dad was a criminal over here, and dad was an immigrant criminal who came over. And again, you know, Tarana Burke, she's admitted that her dad and her family's Caribbean, and we felt that. Black folks don't rock with her. Black people don't connect with no Tarana Burke. Black people have zero connection with her. This is why her audience is basically the white people who use her to undermine black people. She's a cloak for the white supremacists. Tarana. I keep saying Tamara because I played Tamron Hall. So now I got Tamara on the brain, but it's Tarana Burke. But we don't vibe with her energy. So we already knew she wasn't one of us. And now she's trying to splain because people have called her out for working with these white supremacists to target black men. And she tried to say, well, we only went after 5 black men. Look, we targeted 400 white men. Look at all the white men who lost their job. Woman, please. None of those white dudes went to jail. We're talking about the ones who's going to jail. Y'all talking about these white men are losing their job. They're not losing nothing. White supremacists don't lose jobs. They get transferred. You're bragging about paying these dudes or having these dudes get millions of dollars in pensions and payouts. That's your punishment? So your punishment to the white guys is these guys get all types of $100 million severance packages and the brothers go to jail. And you're trying to tell us that this shit ain't racially based. It's not racially motivated.
Y'all want to come at me saying there's a movement against black men? I'm like, so one, cut the bullshit. Stop. Let's have a real conversation about it. So sometimes I've engaged folks and been like, let's talk about reality. You don't really have reality. You're repeating something Tariq Nasheed said, and you're not coming at me with real facts.
Oh, please. So you threw my name in the mix. And, you know, she, because, you know, I've been going in on her. And the First Them movement, you know, that has undermined a lot of their bullshit. And they're mad at me because of that. And she loves to run around with that. Well, with the black girls, I'm here for the black girls. I just got to do it for the black girls. The black girls. Give me a damn break. They don't give a shit. They come over here and try to exploit black women for a come up, for financial gain. They don't do anything for black women. It's nothing but a finesse. It's nothing but a come up. It's not about protecting black girls because you went after Michael Jackson too. Remember? Tarana Burke was right up there when that they had that bullshit Leaving Neverland special. Remember, Tarana Burke was right there. Not only was she right there, she was caping for the Wade Robinson guy. She was caping for the white dudes. Those fake ass accusers. She was caping for them if y'all forgot. So she was caping for daddy. It wasn't about no damn black girl. She was caping for daddy then. That's her job. Her job is to cape for Zaddy. That's her job. Ain't about no damn black girls. Wade Robinson and those and Safe Chuck, whatever his name. Those aren't black girls. Those are Zaddies. And you had your cape on for Zaddy. Don't ever let her fool you about that. The black girls, because if you were so goddamn concerned, and remember, Tarana Burke was running around with all that black folks got a rape culture, black folks are homophobic, black folks are rape culture in black society. Her family's from St. Kitts. Her family is from St. Kitts. Do y'all know the human trafficking and all the pedophilia and all the stuff that goes on over there? These little small islands over there. You know, a lot of that bullshit happens over there in these small islands. A lot of this stuff happens over in these little small islands. You don't never hear her say anything about all the pedophilia and human trafficking over there in St. Kitts. You don't ever hear her talking about all the pedophilia and sex trafficking going on in the Caribbean. In St. Kitts, where her family is from, it's legal to rape your wife. They don't even have a law against raping your damn spouse. They got all types of crazy laws over there. And you over here pointing your finger at us, putting a target on our damn back? Over there in the Caribbean, all types of little pedophile rings go over there. Over there in St. Croix, all those people, remember, that's where Epstein had his little pedophile island out there in the Caribbean. And everybody, all those people in the Caribbean knew and were just turning a blind eye to it. That's all she does is run interception for Zaddy. That's her job. Don't ever let her fool you.
reality. You repeating something Tariq Nasheed said, and you not coming at me with real facts. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's my issue is trolls.
Yeah.
For having a like.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the only curse word you said on this podcast. Was that name?
I'm sorry. You should beep that out. I don't even want to bring that attention again every time you elevating that person. But other than that, you know.
I see you, Jemele Hill. You took your little shot, Jemele Hill. Jemele Hill took a shot. I don't know why. I never said anything negative about Jemele Hill. Jemele Hill wanted to take her little shot. I see you, Jemele. Jemele Hill took a little shot. Where'd that come from? People are like, why is Jemele Hill hating? I never said anything negative about Jemele Hill. All right. Jemele Hill tried to take a little shot. Okay. That's the only cuss word you said. Let me play that again. Jemele Hill tried to take a little shot at a player. Hold on. Damn. Well, I put my Mackin music on. Let me put it back on Jemele Hill. Taking a shot at the player. Hold on. Where we at?
Reality. You don't really have reality. You repeating something Tariq Nasheed said, and you not coming at me with real facts. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's my issue is trolls.
Yeah.
For having a
as far as I'm concerned, that's the only curse word you said on this podcast. Was that name?
I'm sorry. You should beep that out. I don't even want to bring that attention again every time you elevating that person. But other than that, you know.
Elevating.
My dad.
Elevate. How you elevate me? You ain't elevate me. You beneath me socially. But Jemele Hill tried to take a shot at a player. Why are you hating Jemele Hill? Over there looking like a Chucky doll with Rick James braids. How you gonna hate on a player? And you look like a fucking beaver with diabetes. How you gonna hate on a player, Jemele Hill? My God. Jemele Hill's always, she has a thing about black men, especially strong-willed black men. She has a thing about black men. Remember when she was retweeting that shit about black men or the white people of black society? She's on that. She's on that. You dig? So she got a bug in her ass about brothers because ain't nobody fucking with you. Ain't no brothers trying to check. You never got chose up on, sweetie. She's mad and angry. You dig? She's real upset. Nobody ever chose up on her. You dig? So now she's hanging out with Tarana Burke. Hating. My God. Lord have mercy. I'm not going to even go in on her no more. She's too sad for me to go in on. Poor thing. Maybe she can get it together. Maybe we can find her a nice little Filipino man to love her. And she can get a discount on some more synthetic braids. Because she's been wearing them same tight-ass braids for 15 years. Baby, at least get a perm or something. Switch it up. Get a lace front. I know you ain't got no money. ESPN let you go. But if you holler at a player, I trick off a nice bundle for you if you act nice. Anyway, let me get out of here, y'all. Let me get out of here, man. That's been today's episode of Tariq Radio. Man, y'all better go to hiddencolorsfilm.com and get your foundational Black American t-shirts. Boy, we deep in here. Almost 6,000 people in here right now on what night is this? Thursday? I forgot. My days and shit all mixed up. I might be coming to Atlanta soon. I got to do some stuff with my property down there. I might be coming to Atlanta soon. All my property managers, holler at me, man. You guys do property management out there, holler at me because I got to go down there and work with some property managers in Atlanta. And if you guys are in the business, holler at me, man. Let's chop up and do some business, man. I'm about to go and I want to talk to my business folks. And I mean business people. Don't hit me up and you ain't got no experience and y'all just, hey, man, I manage properties. What kind of work you do now? Well, I work at the Del Taco right now, but what I can't, no, nigga, no. My professionals holler at me so we can chop it up. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com, ladies and gentlemen. HiddenColorsFilm.com. I'm a holler. Peace.